time for a recap episode of Till I Say It Out Loud. I have some things I definitely need to process through verbally because some huge news just dropped within the last like 2 hours of me recording this. So I'm going to get into that. I've got like a whole list of stuff to go over for this week, the week of Saturday, March 23rd. So let's just get right into it. Right off the top, I'm going to deal with, I wouldn't call this political, but just political adjacent stuff. If you want to skip through that, maybe the next like minute or so, I'm just going to mention that Kyle Rittenhouse was asked to be like a keynote speaker at Memphis University this week. If you don't remember who Kyle Rittenhouse is, he was that teen, like he was like 19 or something when he went to a Black Lives Matter protest and murdered two people. He was acquitted of murdering them, but he absolutely did kill them. They are dead. And one of them was trying to rush towards him to stop him from shooting people. And he shot that person who was unarmed. So anyways, Kyle Rittenhouse is basically a piece of garbage and is a murderer. He absolutely straight up murdered two people. And so he was acquitted and then became like the face of the GOP, like stand your ground and like they were looting, so they deserved it, that kind of thing. It was disgusting. And he was asked to be a keynote speaker for some reason, like on this campus. And there are videos of tons of students booing him, heckling him, basically just shaming him off campus. And it made my heart sore to see this. And I feel like people like Kyle Rittenhouse don't deserve to go anywhere without having to face the consequences of their actions. If you don't have the legal consequences don't befall your actions, like you got acquitted, you didn't serve jail time for straight up killing two people, well, then you at minimum don't deserve to go anywhere comfortably the rest of your life. So love that for him. Love every student on that campus that chased and booed him. And I think like at one of the videos I saw on TikTok were like band students. I don't know if they were like coming from practice or something, but they were like chasing him off campus with their saxophones, like playing. Like they were, it was exactly what he deserved. Love that. A lot of new music this week, a lot of music news. So I didn't get to talk about Ariana Grande's new album, which dropped like 2 weeks ago, maybe a little, like maybe even longer ago. Like it was so unimpressionable to me that it just went under my radar and I missed it. I forgot it. So I will say about Ariana Grande's new album, I felt like, I don't know, like it was, here's the thing, Ariana has a pretty voice, and especially because she dropped her like weird appropriated like dialect on this one where she just sounds like how she probably normally sounds if she isn't trying to like sound a different way. Her voice is gonna sound pretty no matter what. Some of the songs are really fun and cute and like I enjoy them. Like Supernatural on that album is good. I enjoy it, but the content is obviously questionable. She has a song called Boy Is Mine on it. And we already know, like, she literally dated a man who left his 10-year partner and one-month-old baby to be with her. And she left her husband to be with him. And so, like, The Boy Is Mine is, like, a very sus title to put on your album or to put on your song. It's very in bad taste considering a postpartum wife lost her husband to you. That's really messed up. And then there's like a song where she like rhymes sorry with the word sorry. Like she just says sorry twice. So like obviously the craftsmanship on this album is like not great, but there are some bops. I will say that there are some bops. Hozier and Olivia Rodrigo both dropped new songs Today, I'm recording this on Friday, so on the 22nd of March, they dropped, between the two of them, like, it was like almost a whole full album for me to get to listen to today. So Hozier dropped, I think, 4 new songs on his Unheard EP, and Olivia re-released Guts, and it's the Spilled edition, which I think is adorable, and she has 6 new songs. So altogether, I, a person who loves both Hozier and Olivia Rodrigo, got 10 new songs to listen to today. Love them, obviously. Huge fans of them both. They're very different types of music, but I feel like they released some songs that kind of tack onto their last album, and they're both beautiful. Hozier has a song called Too Sweet that I can't stop listening to. Like, can't, like, physically cannot stop listening or humming. Like, love it. On Olivia Rodrigo's album, Guts Spilled, the songs are all, I liked all of them. I would say highlight for me is American and Stranger, but also Scared of My Guitar. She does a lot more, like, kind of stripped down, whimsical little songs with, like, just some strum chords, but then she also does that really high energy, like, Liz Phair, early 2000s girly pop kind of stuff. I just love her. So I really enjoyed both of those new sets of songs dropping from those artists. Beyonce this week also revealed her new album cover art and that it's going to be called Cowboy Carter. So this has received a lot of attention, obviously, because anything Beyonce does is going to. She is on the cover on a horse, and she's like a rodeo. She's like a rodeo, which is really cool. She's from Houston. Rodeos are huge there. She's obviously doing this reclaiming of country and Black history, and Black history being erased from certain genres, which is really cool. I'm not going to get into it too deep because I don't want to really give Azalea Banks too much time, but, like, she on her Instagram wrote, like, a dissertation about Beyonce doing country and doing all this, like, imagery that Azalea Banks kind of called pick me energy. I just wanted to make note of that because it's interesting to read. I just think it's wild that someone can have so much well thought out commentary that I disagree with so much. Like, I was just reading this and I was like, wow, this girl really was thinking about this and really, like, articulated this well, but it is so inaccurate. Like, in my opinion, I was like, but it's so wrong. So anyways, that was kind of interesting. If you're more interested in hearing a little bit more about that, you should look up Azalea Banks's reaction to Cowboy Carter. Now on to the big stuff for this week. I was literally just hours ago, maybe like an hour and a half ago, walking back down the hallway at work and saw one of my coworkers darting into my room looking for me. And I was like, oh, I'm over here. What happened? And she looked like an emergency was happening. She had her phone in hand and she was like, they dropped the news about Kate Middleton, because we have been waiting all week. They told us that they're going to make an important announcement. The palace is going to make an important announcement about Kate. Well, we assumed it was about Kate at some point this week, anytime between like Monday and Wednesday. And here it is Friday when I'm recording this, and they had not said a word. And we were just like, okay, I guess they're just like not going to tell us anything. Cool. So Lauren has this video up, my coworker, on her phone from her mom, and her mom has recorded like the CNN footage of the breaking news. And the breaking news is that Kate Middleton has announced that she has cancer. I'm going to read it directly from her statement to get it right, because it's really big news and it's really serious news. She is going to have preventative chemotherapy that she went in January and underwent major abdominal surgery in London And they thought that her condition was non-cancerous, is what she said. She said the surgery was a success. However, tests after the operation found that cancer had been present. So I guess they did a biopsy of whatever they took out. And therefore, they advised her to undergo a course of preventative chemotherapy to make sure that the cancer does not return and that it's all gone. And she also mentioned that she is in the early stages of that treatment, meaning so she's already started chemotherapy, which makes a lot of sense. So what I thought was really odd online, and what I have absorbed of the online reaction so far, is at first people were getting really self-righteous online and very judgmental and uppity and saying things like, well, I hope you're happy. And like talking about people who were speculating and like looking into conspiracy theories, like were in the wrong, as if speculating on Kate and her whereabouts and wondering what the heck was going on with the royal family gave her cancer. Like, I don't know what these people are like thinking they have this moral superiority about, but it was very bizarre. I was like, what are you implying? Like, no one speculates. No one even has a question about Kate Middleton, aside from, especially in America, because we didn't even know originally that they had put out, I won't say we didn't know. I didn't even really know. Lots of myself and my peers over here didn't even really know anything was going on with Kate Middleton, or that there was a announcement in December that she was going to be out of the public eye for a while. Until a few weeks ago. Like, I didn't realize what the heck was even going on with this until the palace started mucking up, essentially, the PR for this whole scenario. Like, I only got interested in any of this because questionable things were put out in the media by the palace. If they had just shut up and just said, yeah, we told you guys she's not going to be around for a while, that's the truth, we'll talk to you more about it after Easter, as they had originally stated, I don't really understand. Like, they could have just been tapped the sign like, no, we told you guys, we'll see you in a little bit, we told you guys. Like, but no, instead they had to put out a fake photo of Kate Middleton that got a kill order in the media, which caused backlash from the media, which is why they started posting, allegedly, why they started posting stories about William's mistress in retaliation for receiving a fake image that they had to kill, and then had to post a jolly video of her in like joggers just chilling and hanging out at the farmer's market. Like, what did they say that was, like, 5 days ago that she was doing that? And today she's saying, actually, no, I've been going through chemotherapy. So like, anybody on their high horse about people speculating because we were lied to in the press by the literal palace, and want to act like we're the crazy ones for having questions, like, please go take a nap. Like, I don't have time for that. I think it's absolutely insane to act like obviously and clearly untrue falsehoods were posted in a official capacity by the firm, by the palace, by these people who are demanding that we respect her privacy now. It's like, okay, well, you're the one who stirred all this confusion up by clearly lying, and you got caught in your lies because you did such a bad job handling this. So just get out of my face. Anybody who wants to be like some weird moral soldier about this, you need to get out of my face. I think that is insanity. It's absolutely asinine. Now, on the other side, people have been speculating. They're like, well, why in the world was it handled like this? Like, why did they feel like they had to do this? Why couldn't they have just told us about Kate and her illness, like, months ago? They literally said in December she would be going away for a while and that they gave us a date for her abdominal surgery. So I do not understand. That was 2 months ago. That was over 2 months ago. At some point between then and now, they could have been like, okay, Kate is sick and we know what it is now and this is what she's going to go through. And, you know, keep her in your thoughts. Like, how hard is that? I don't understand all of this caginess around it. It makes no sense. Someone posted on my Twitter feed, like, it could just be how it looks. And I'm like, it can't. It looks, okay, great. It looks shady. It looks like they lied to us. Why would they ever put out a kill notice for an image that wasn't a problem? Like, clearly there is a lot more going on. I just don't understand ignoring how weird things have been. I just don't understand ignoring that. To me, it's like, because I'm not invested in the royals at all. Like, I was only invested in this story because I was like, this is so bizarre and weird. And I only got interested in the last like week and a half. I don't care. Like, I'm okay with questioning it. I'm okay with being wrong. Like, I don't have a dog in the fight. There is nothing wrong, I feel, with people speculating and having questions when someone messes up this bad, messes up the messaging that bad. So I don't feel bad and no one's going to make me apologize for speculating. Like, I just don't get the wringing of the hands. Some people were also pointing out that in Kate's video, she did this beautiful video message where she looks very lovely and she's sitting on a park bench. And by the way, doesn't look like half the photos they tried to pass off as her in the midst of all of this. Looks literally nothing like those photos. But she's like sitting on a park bench or something by herself. And so people are kind of wondering, like, well, where's William? Why isn't the future king next to his future queen while she's like holding her hand while she's making this horrific announcement that she has this terrible health condition and she is undergoing chemotherapy? Why is this happening? And I know there's just no way to make everyone happy, but I also do think, sorry, that's a legitimate question. Why in the world is he not there? It doesn't make any sense to me. None of this makes any sense to me. A few notable tweets to me. I just have two. There was hundreds on both sides, but I'm only going to read the two that I want to talk about a little bit more. One is by @JasonByJason. It says, "Cancer is a tragedy. I feel especially for Kate's children and hope she makes a full recovery. Separately, all of the weird fake staged media was ludicrous and the absolute worst way to handle this and only fanned the flames of online conspiracy." I was so grateful for this tweet because I just felt like I was taking crazy pills when I saw people being like, how do you feel now? I'm like, I don't feel different. I actually feel worse for Kate because I will say this, from the beginning, none of the conspiracies that I saw were anything but of concern for her. The BBL and growing out your bangs thing, that was a joke. No one actually thought those things. Most of those jokes were making fun of people like the Kardashians. Like, every true conspiracy that people, like theory that people were actually considering, were all about concern for her. Is she being cheated on? Did she have a mental breakdown? Did she have a mental health episode? Did she have an eating disorder situation? Is she going through hysterectomy? Did she have a ectopic pregnancy? Did she stop wanting to put up with William's affair? Like, all of those are in favor of her. So, like, the people saying, like, you guys harassed her while she was going through this, it's like, no, we didn't. We didn't harass her. Lots of people were just like, produce that white woman. Where is she? And so I think two things can be true. You don't have to go to one side of it and be like, oh, I'm a horrible person for thinking that. I can't believe I said those things. Well, they didn't tell you the truth. They lied to you. They made you feel crazy. They made you wonder these things. And I don't feel bad for speculating. And I definitely wouldn't want to feel this like moral outrage against people who made the very reasonable conclusion that something weird is going on here because there are literally, as Jason by Jason said, weird fake staged media. That was ludicrous. I absolutely agree with the way he phrased that. Another tweet that I thought was interesting, it just raises an interesting speculation about why all of this has happened. Why did they go to the links they went to not announce that she had cancer when, like, someone pointed out, like, not only is that something people would feel bad for her about and have empathy for, but it would make her very relatable to many people who have gone through that or have, you know, have had an encounter with that in their life. So this woman called April, she's at Reign of April, which I think is an adorable name. She says, "I'm so sorry that Kate is having these health challenges. I'm appalled that the institution bungled the communication so poorly for months, but maybe Charles didn't want his cancer diagnosis to be upstaged." I think that's a really interesting point of view. It's the only explanation anyone has offered for why they would have delayed just saying the truth when they've known since January 16th. That's when her abdominal surgery was. So I'm assuming they biopsied it and maybe within the week knew it was cancer. If they've known since then, literally 2 months ago, why did they go through all the trouble to lie about her whereabouts and her going to the farmer's market and photoshopping and all that? And that is something I could see happening, especially considering he was so extremely pissed all the time about Diana overshadowing him and Diana just, like, not even being able to help it, but, like, everyone just loved her and everyone wanted to, like, see what she had to say over him his entire career. Do I think that it's true? I have no idea, but I could see it. I could absolutely see it. And that is because I think so lowly of Charles. And I think so often we've seen in the past that, like, Camilla can be very strategic in the media. We've seen it with Meghan and Harry. They had a perfect way to present to the public that Charles went in for a procedure. Charles came out of the procedure. Here's a diagnosis. Here's how he's doing. They showed pictures. It was perfect. There's no reason the same institution could not have done the exact same thing for Kate, except they just didn't want to. And I really believe if they didn't want to do that, it probably has to do with the fact that someone else in the institution didn't want them to, for some reason. And it makes sense to me that it would be William being like, "Well, I'm the one who has cancer and I want people to care about me." Because literally, I've never seen so much sympathy for him ever in his life than when I saw, like, in December when he was diagnosed with cancer. Also, lots of people cheering and hoping he dies, and, like, to each their own, but also that warms people to you. If you are a leader and you're like, "I'm sick, something that is out of my control is harming me," people tend to kind of soften a bit, you know? And I think that happened. But with all of this, I don't know. The comment that April made, I just feel she's onto something, to be honest. And anyways, even if it was for a more reasonable, like, reason, that Kate wasn't ready to share this news with the public yet, which is totally reasonable. Her PR people still bungled this so badly. They caused a shitstorm that forced her to make a video about it regardless, before Easter, before they said she would be coming back. It's just bad all around with the PR. The last thing I'm going to talk about today is the documentary Quiet on Set, which details and covers the child abuse on the sets of Nickelodeon shows in the 90s and the early 2000s. So if you're not down for that, or maybe you haven't gotten to see the doc yet and you don't want to be spoiled, turning off the episode now is probably a good idea for you. It is going to be a little heavy. I'm not going to detail any of the abuse, because it was a lot for me. So I don't want to upset anybody. So I'm not going to detail any of the abuse, but I am going to kind of, like, summarize some stuff and discuss my thoughts on those. So if you want to hit the road, I'll see you next week. So Quiet on Set covered the Dan Schneider like empire at Nickelodeon. And I want to start by saying I am a 38-year-old millennial. The 90s on Nickelodeon was, that was my time. Like, I was a Nickelodeon kiddo. I Disney was not my jam. I was not a Disney kid. I watched Disney movies, but even the Disney movies I watched, like, I only liked, like, the Renaissance movies. Like, that, they count the Disney Renaissance from, like, Little Mermaid through the 90s. The classic Disney movies always bored me. I was not a Disney kid. And also, I apologize if I sound stopped up. It's because I am. The allergies have been very bad this week. Anyways, I'm doing my best so I don't have to, like, keep editing sneezes out throughout this episode. Nickelodeon was my favorite channel. I loved so many of the shows, and a lot of the shows that they discuss on the first few episodes of this documentary, there are four episodes, were some of my favorites. All That, The Amanda Show. They have Kenan and Kel on there for a second. They don't discuss too much going on that set, which is good, I guess, because, I mean, I don't know if that means nothing happened on that set, but I didn't. If they didn't include it, it makes me have hope that nothing happened on that set. But there were so many familiar faces from my childhood, and it was just, it was very tough. And my heart was breaking watching it and realizing and, like, understanding as an adult how fraught the entertainment that I loved as a child was and the behind the scenes were, and that those children that I loved, because they were like, they were, I was a child and I loved watching them and we were silly together. I was an only child, and my television, I mean, I was an only child who was an extrovert. So I was very connected to these people. It just broke my heart to see how, what they went through to bring that entertainment into our rooms as kids, and it's not worth it. Like, it was just, it was horrific. So the main thing about the documentary, their big reveal, was that Drake Bell, who was on the Amanda Show, Amanda Bynes, was abused by Brian Peck. And Brian Peck was a guy who had worked on many, many shows. He also worked on Growing Pains and a few other big Disney shows. In fact, after Brian Peck was convicted, he was charged at first with like 8 counts. He ended up with only being convicted of 2 counts, I think. He only had to serve 16 months in jail for what he did to Drake Bell. And I'm gonna be really honest with you guys. The episode watching Drake tell his story had me in tears. And I'm not trying to be dramatic, but I did have nightmares. Every night I watched the documentary, I had nightmares. And it isn't because it's not a graphic documentary, but it's just something that, like, because it meant so much to me, like, that Nickelodeon meant so much to me growing up, like, having to deconstruct that, I think my brain was just processing it through the night. And so just be prepared. It's a lot to take on. So after Brian Peck hurt Drake in what he describes as the worst ways that you can be hurt, he literally says, it's the third episode, if you guys are interested, of the docuseries, that he doesn't want to talk about what happened to him, but he does say, just imagine, like, the worst stuff that can happen. And the thing that thing that got me is they didn't have him say it, but they would flash it across the screen in the legal documents what he was charged with. And it's just horrific. It's horrific stuff, y'all. So even though he was convicted and went to jail, Brian Peck was hired on at Disney after the 16 months in jail for lewd acts with a child. He was hired on a Disney show with children. So I know that we always say, like, the 80s were the wild, wild west and children weren't taken care of well then. And that comes from just, like, me listening to true crime. And I think, like, Georgia Hardstark on My Favorite Murder says the 80s needs to go to jail. After watching this documentary, I think the 90s need to go to jail too. Like, the things that were allowed to happen to these children on set were absolutely insane. And then people just, like, would shrug it off and minimize it. Brian Peck had 41 celebrities write him letters begging the judge to make sure his sentence was like light and basically blaming the victim, quote unquote, who was a child, a 15-year-old child. And I know that to them, Brian Peck was a person. And at the time, the victim was a faceless, nameless John Doe. But it was a 15-year-old boy. And one of the people who wrote a letter like asking for the judge not to sentence him to too much was James Marsden, which is like everyone's favorite sweetheart. So I hope he comes out and like speaks against what he did, because that is truly heinous. And some of the letters actually were like, he must have been really tempted. Like, he must have been really pressured. He was like a 40-something-year-old man. There's no way a 40-something-year-old man is ever going to be pressured by a 15-year-old child. So I just, y'all, it was so infuriating because I watched it hoping that I would get some like, yeah, let's get some like justice. We're going to see how they're like exposing these people. And unfortunately, like, justice just was not served. They go on to talk about how Brian Peck was around multiple other stars at the time, and that they showed clips of Brian Peck interacting with a very young Leonardo DiCaprio. Like, it was onset of Growing Pains. It was pre-Gilbert Grape. Like, he was young. And I used to watch Growing Pains when I was a child, because they would do reruns on Disney, and I loved him. I was in love with him from Titanic, and so I would watch Growing Pains for him. And so that was a huge part of my childhood as well. And to see that disgusting man, who I had just watched like an episode detailing what he did to another child, like clinging and like touching. Leo DiCaprio is one of my favorite stars of all time, but who was deeply rooted in my childhood. Just watch that creep touch him. It sent chills down my spine. I was ill. I was sick to my stomach. And I just can only pray that nothing happened to him too. But like, I just feel like anyone Brian Peck was around, knowing how evil, knowing how calculated this man is in order to get what he wants, I wouldn't put it past him with anything. The boys from, not the Savage brother, not Ben Savage, but the other two boys from Boy Meets World wrote letters. It's just, for Brian Peck, it was just so upsetting. It was just such an upsetting thing to see. On the other side of that, we've got the Dan Schneider stuff. So the reason the whole thing is set around these Nickelodeon shows is because Dan Schneider, who like created all these shows, they call it the Schneider Empire or whatever. He's the one who kind of created this culture on set where it was like, I'm not going to say it was like okay to be a pedophile, but it definitely fostered a culture that it made it easy to be a pedophile. It was because this man, Brian Peck, was not the only person on set who was arrested within Schneider's sphere or on one of his sets for being a pedophile. He was one of three. And so when you're looking at that and you're like, wait, what in the world? Then you go a little deeper and you start looking at the culture just on set that of toxicity that he creates. The children are scared of him. The children's parents are like kind of left out of certain things. The women on set are made to feel like they're out of place unless they put up with very inappropriate activities and behaviors. Dan Schneider always has either a kid or a woman on set massaging him. Like, it is very creepy. It is a very, very creepy vibe. One thing I do want to go back and just comment on before I move away from Drake Bell and his whole situation is Drake Bell's father is an absolute angel. And through that documentary, he's the reason I had tears in my eyes like half the time, is because this man tried so hard to protect his son. And Brian Peck, who is a predator, did everything that he could to separate and distance his victim from his father. And Drake Bell's father could tell, And he did everything that he could. And he still was broken on this documentary, feeling like he failed, despite the fact that it wasn't he failed. It's just that this was a predator and he knew what he was doing. So I wanted to say that because he really was like such a dear, dear man. And I believe he deserves the world for the pain he's gone through, but like for what he tried to do to protect his son. All that to say, we'll move it back around to the Amanda Bynes of it all makes me want to absolutely just burst into tears. If I think about it too long, I just get despondent. Mostly because Amanda Bynes is so incredible. She was so smart and so funny. And she was goofy. She was weird funny. She wasn't like cute funny. You know what I mean? Like, she was allowed as a young girl to be a silly, weird, quirky, funny. And I just loved it. It was a type of weird that so often like girls don't get to be because they're supposed to be pretty or hot. And she was just like pretty and funny and weird. And it was great. And she had so much potential. So what eventually comes out is that Dan Schneider makes people on set like uncomfortable. He has a very like touchy-feely relationship with Amanda Bynes. It causes lots of speculation about that relationship. Also that Amanda Bynes' parents were really shady and that there was a lot going on there. And because I think Dan Schneider tried to come in between Amanda Bynes and her parents, their work relationship broke up, and so then they separated. And then Amanda Bynes' parents put her on a conservatorship and then started stealing her money. So, allegedly. She had a Twitter back in the day where she was posting that this is the real Amanda, I'm telling you the truth, here's all these things that happened to me, they're trying to discredit me. And at the time, everybody was like, oh, she's just crazy. And I think that's that reaction from society really speaks to why things like what was happening in the 90s were so easy and rampant to get away with. Like, Amanda Bynes had a career through the early 2000s, and she was being called crazy by the time it was 2013, 2014. And we were allowing it to go by without questioning it. 3 years later, 4 years later, 2017, the Me Too movement happens and we shift and we go, oh, wait, what if we believed women when they told us things? And that is finally when Dan Schneider and all of his misogyny and the hostile work environments telling women that they need to lighten up or pretend to be sexualized by men and that it's okay, or share a salary, one salary between the two of you when every other man here gets their own paycheck. It wasn't until the Me Too movement that he finally got fired off of Nickelodeon. And the thing about that is he had already been investigated two other times for the work environment that he created. And if you read Jeanette McCurdy's book, it's called I'm Glad My Mom Died, which she wrote about her experience as a child star and how her mom was like a malignant narcissist and was very abusive to her and then forced her to be an actress. And so there she ends up in one of Schneider's Empire shows. She talks about being offered $300,000 when the show got canceled to not talk about her experience on the show. And she, as a young person, called it what it was hush money. And she said, I'm good. I'm not going to take the money. And she talked about it. She doesn't name Dan Schneider in her book, but that's who she's talking about because she says it's the creator. And she says she tells the stories of how horrific she was treated by this grown man who was essentially bullying a teenage young girl on set. I think it was Zoe 101 that she was on the set of. And then, oh no, it wasn't Zoe 101. That's stupid. That was Britney Spears' little sister. Sorry, guys. This was after my time on Nickelodeon. I think I had aged out of Nickelodeon by this point. So I'm not as familiar with the later shows. So she was on iCarly and Sam and Cat. So Sam and Cat was a spinoff of iCarly, I think. And that's the one that Ariana Grande was on, which That is a whole other conversation where there are really inappropriate jokes on these shows that are made by grown men and like run by grown men like Dan Schneider and a few pedophiles. And then they are put on TV for children, acted out by children. And so there's some really inappropriate jokes, some really terrible innuendo on the Amanda Show, on the Ariana Grande show. There was like a clip of her with a potato and like pouring water on herself. Guys, it's just, it's very disturbing. And if we watch it back now, we might go, how the hell did we let this happen? Like, how did we do this? I think back then, the culture was just like, hey, it's dude humor, it's cool, it's fine. And you just kind of have to accept it. And if you're not accepting it, you're a drag, you know, you're a nag, you're a loser. And that's kind of how the women on set were made to feel. Like, oh, you're uncomfortable? Well, then you're dumb. You're a loser. You're a bitch. I don't know. I'm just so sad. Dan Schneider, in the documentary, they'll put in little clips of, like, his reps, like, with their comments back. And so they deny everything. They say, actually, everything on set was approved by many people. Parents were aware of everything. Basically saying, if y'all are gonna call me out, you have to call everybody else out, which I do agree with, but it's not, that's not to say that he doesn't deserve anything. And also there's documented misogyny. Like, he literally told women to their face who he hired on his show to write that women are not funny, innately not funny, and that they are the only two people on the entire staff who had to share a salary. Like, it's documented. So you can't really sit there and say, well, Dan Schneider isn't convicted of pedophilia or anything else, so we can't say anything. We can use our critical thinking. We're not idiots, you know? And so I was glad to see that he did get fired. But of course, his rep said, oh, that's not how we parted ways. I decided I wanted to leave. And I'm like, sure, that's what every narcissist said. It's like, oh, we didn't break up, I left. Or, you know, oh, I'm not wrong, actually, you're just misunderstanding. Or, I didn't hurt your feelings, you're just sensitive. Like, it's the same shit that you see everywhere. So he got interviewed. I refused to watch it because I'm not interested in the platforming of abusers. And I think anybody who does a platform abusers is really stupid. And I'm not interested. So I did not watch it, and I never will. So y'all, that was the week. It was a lot. And I need to go blow my nose. But thanks for listening. And I will catch you next week.